And now, a personal favourite of mine, stay right here for another instalment from Documentally.
I'm in the back of a car, a very nice car, cleaner than mine for sure, and we're heading to the train station. Thank you so much, Martha Lane Fox, for taking a few moments out after a pretty hectic day at the Open University.
No, it's not been that hectic. I'm lucky. I basically have a very easy job at the OU. I get to say thank you to people and I get to give people degrees. So even if it's busy, it's always fun.
I'm getting the feeling that you're properly under the table at the Open University.
I was made Chancellor last October, September, October, I can't remember. And it's been just fantastic. I find it one of the most irrefutably good organisations, and the philosophy and ethos is something that is so important and inspiring. I am constantly leaving various events with a huge smile on my face.
And how about today, Peter Horrocks, a call to action, wanting to fight the good fight for what he called a social movement when it comes to part-time education.
Yes, I really love that description of the OU as a social movement, because the background of the learners in the OU is the most broad of any university, I would imagine, maybe in the world, but I'll definitely go with the UK. As Peter said in his speech, if you look at it just purely in economic terms, then the benefit to individuals just in their own lifetime earning to doing an Open University course is enormous, but then obviously also more broadly to us as a society. So economically, morally, socially, there is so much the Open University contributes to the UK landscape.
Now, there was some scary statistics and a lot of problems being talked about when it came to the drop in people undertaking part-time education. You advise an awful lot of organisations facing disruption from so many different angles. Can you see any solutions?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Firstly, Peter's right that I don't think the issue has been crystallised in the kind of public consciousness or even the kind of private minds probably of some of the people who can influence and help improve the situation. I think that in all of the excitement over firstly tuition fees changes and then the fact that that didn't lead to a complete collapse in full-time students, part-time students just got forgotten, and probably the part-time sector didn't make as good enough job at making enough noise about it. So the very important first task, as Peter said in his speech, is to make sure that as a sector, not just the Open University, but a group of universities all with a role to play, and as students and as influencers, anybody else, we say that the value of a part-time degree is enormous, that we all benefit from people doing this, and that it's incredibly important that we recognise those people and recognise that the numbers need to stabilise again. So that's the first part. And then the second part, I think, is being more perhaps bold and thinking about potential solutions, going to ministers with bigger, newer ideas about how to address some of the challenges of financing the sector. I'm certainly not a higher education financing expert, but I really welcome Peter's call to come up with some good and executable ways that this problem can be addressed rather than just moaning about it.
And the talk of the value of this kind of education kind of overshadowed by the elephant in the room today, I think, which was tuition fees.
Yep, absolutely right. And of course, if you're taking up a part-time course, you might already be trying to hold down a couple of jobs. You know, I've met so many people in my degree ceremonies who are such staggeringly brave individuals, because not only have they undertaken sometimes very complex courses, but also they're working 70 hours a week and they have children and they're volunteering in their local organisation. You know, it's quite amazing what people find time to do. So yes, this is partly driven by tuition fees, of course, and that's why Peter's completely right to think boldly about how we can maybe restructure things, come up with big new ideas for ministers, make sure that the sector doesn't suffer, because it's so valuable.
Thank you so much. I think a lot of what you do, you get called a digital activist quite a lot of the time because of a lot of the incredible work you're doing right now around getting people connected, looking at not just infrastructure, but I guess networked learning would fit into this very well. Tell me what you're most passionate about at the moment when it comes to your varied projects.
Do you know what? I feel so lucky because I don't really have a proper job. Everything I do, I choose to do, and I enjoy it for different reasons. You know, the work that Go On UK, the digital skills charity I founded, does is important, difficult, on-the-ground work, helping people learn how to use the internet. Not very glamorous, but so fundamental in empowering people. And I'm completely kind of militant and evangelical about making this a plank of how we help empower the most vulnerable people, either infrastructure or skills, or obviously both being the ideal. So that's one, you know, hugely interesting and I would hope important piece of work. Then I'm at the other end of the spectrum. I've been asked a while ago to sit on this panel looking at oversight of the security services. This is being administered by RUSI for the Deputy Prime Minister, and that has been just unbelievably both challenging and interesting in light of everything that the Snowden revelations taught us, what are our boundaries around what we can expect, both in terms of civil liberties and our own intellectual freedoms. And it's hard to spend more than 10 minutes thinking about that without feeling pretty overwrought, overwhelmed and overexcited about some of the challenges that throws out. So those are just two kind of slightly wildly different ends of the spectrum of my very strange working life.
All vital, though, all absolutely vital. I've just got back from Turin working with the UN, UNICRI in particular, their department there, on helping journalists to protect their sources, because their communication now is just leaking all over the place.
I know, it's absolutely unbelievable when you start looking at how journalists have been being spied on for the work they do. And while I completely appreciate that people feel that there is a trade-off to make between some of their freedoms and the notion of security, I would argue that's not a straight line and not a well understood line. And until we have a proper public debate about these issues, not just in the pages of one particularly noble newspaper, then I don't think we're ever going to really be able to address them properly. Documentally. And on that incredibly lucky note, we end up right outside Milton Keynes Station, as if timed perfectly.
Perfect timing. Thank you, driver.
Please join me in the car anytime. It was lovely to chat.
Thank you.
And nice to meet you.